Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
3, 2, 1.
But I've worked it out. I love to listen to your podcast.
Whenever you say something, other people react to it.
Taking my breath away, Aaron.
Vern Lundquist joins me. Hall of Famer. Jim Calhoun, NASCAR icon Dale Earnhardt Jr. Kirk Herbstreit is on the phone.
Here we go.
Oh, he's so handsome. What's his name?
Welcome in, everybody. Episode 465 of the podcast, It Is Sweeping America, the Air Tour Sports Podcast. It is Sunday, December 5th, Monday, December 6th, 2021. It remains to be seen. Loaded episode of the Air Tour Sports Podcast. Don't know when I'll drop this. There is so much going on. I cannot believe that even with the season over, the news continues to flow in. We're going to discuss it all. We'll obviously start. The college football playoff field is set. All the major bowl games are set. And we'll kind of use the framework of what happened on Saturday in that SEC championship, in that Big Ten championship, to discuss the college football playoff. Some obvious takeaways there. From there, we'll continue the conversation. Hit on a little bit of coaching carousel. It never ends. Oklahoma appears to have a head coach. Miami is just, I don't even know what is going on at Miami, so we'll discuss that. And then from there, we'll hit a little transfer portal. Quinn Ewers, the number one quarterback in the country, actually is leaving Ohio State after less than one full season on campus. Where could he end up? Craziness there. And finally, we'll wrap with a little college hoops. One big takeaway, I believe, from the weekend as Alabama, as they're celebrating an SEC title, Alabama basketball goes up to Seattle and beats Gonzaga. To me, this says a lot about Alabama in a positive way more than it says anything negative about Gonzaga, again, in a negative way. With that said, though, let's get to the topic of the day. And the topic of the day is we got ourselves a college football playoff. We obviously got all these big bowl games as well, all the small bowl games. If you came here for a rundown of the Duke's Mayo Bowl or of the, I don't know, the Cure Bowl or the Gasparilla Bowl, this probably isn't the place for you. We're going to talk college football playoff and a couple of these other major bowl games in a minute. But the college football playoff field is set. We know who the four teams are. You don't need me to tell you too much about the field. But like I said, what I want to do is kind of do some quick reaction based off of and with the framework of what happened on Saturday in some of the major kind of conference championship games. And so the field is set. Top four are in. We know what they are. Alabama off of that resounding win over Georgia, 41-24 in Atlanta on Saturday in the SEC championship game. They are the number one seed. Michigan, first Big Ten championship since 2004. Congratulations to Michigan fans. Michigan is the two seed. Georgia is your third overall seed. How about my dogs? Not as loud of a bark today from your boy Torres after Georgia got smoked in Atlanta. And then number four is Cincinnati, a very deserving group of five champion. Cincinnati is in the college football playoff, the first time ever a non-Power 5 team gets into the playoff. With that said, kind of some quick takeaways. And the first one is, I would say this. I think the committee got it right. And I don't think there was really that much to screw up. I thought most any conversation that was coming out of a championship Saturday was kind of manufactured to create interest in the selection show. But I will say, I do believe the committee got it right. Alabama as the number one overall seed. First of all, let me say this. Crimson Tide fans, you were right. I was wrong. Trust Nick Saban. Trust the process. Never doubt Saban. I have been the guy that has been as critical, if not more critical, of Alabama this year than anybody. Just didn't feel like this team was built to win a national championship. And that is, of course, the standard in Tuscaloosa. But going into Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and destroying Georgia the way they did, they did something that pretty much is unprecedented that I can remember in this college football playoff era. We'll get into that game in a minute. But they went from probably a team that nobody really thought was going to end up inside the field of four to now a very deserving number one overall seed. Yes, I believe they should have been the number one overall seed. Number two is Michigan. And I'll say, you know, I saw some talk about Michigan potentially being the number one overall seed. I think it's been an incredible year for Jim Harbaugh, for that Michigan team. I can't deny that I did not think this one was coming either. But I thought Michigan should be the two seed. I thought Alabama should be one. Georgia at three. I did see the usual anti-SEC people. I feel like I'm somewhere in the middle. I'm not Mr. SEC honk, but I also kind of understand it's the best conference with the best players and the best coaches. I saw some people as soon as that Georgia game went final. Who have they beaten? Do they even deserve to be in the field? Yes, Georgia deserves to be in the field. I think they got that right at number three. And Cincinnati at number four. I'll say this, I don't think most people realize how close we were to not having Cincinnati in the playoff at all. If that Oklahoma State running back got about another foot and got the ball in the end zone on the final play of the Big 12 championship game, maybe I guess the second to final play because there was a kneel down afterward. But Baylor is not the Big 12 champ. Oklahoma State is, and Oklahoma State's probably in the playoff and boots out Cincinnati. So I don't think people realize how close we were to not having Cincinnati in this playoff at all, but they are in as the number four seed and very deserving. So I think the committee got it right. That's my first big takeaway. It was going to be hard to screw this up, but I never have any doubt that they can if they will, but I think they got it right here. The second big takeaway is, I think it actually turned into a very compelling playoff. And a couple thoughts here. The first one being is that, look, I've talked about this a lot over the last couple weeks. I thought one big complaint that was justified about college football over the last 3, 4, 5 years is that it had become too stale. It had become too predictable that you kind of knew, okay, Clemson's going to win the ACC. Ohio State's going to win the Big Ten. Oklahoma's going to win the Big 12. Alabama's going to win the SEC. And then it's just kind of figuring out among those teams who are the elite best ones. And so I think it's great for college football that we have some fresh blood in this thing. I think it's great that Michigan is in as a Big Ten representative, not just for Michigan, not just for Michigan fans, but for a Penn State fan, for a Michigan State fan that can look at Michigan, look at what Michigan did to Ohio State and say, we're not all playing for second place. We can do this. Obviously, what Cincinnati did for the entire group of five, I think is so important for the sport as a whole. We're going to get to 12 eventually. The group of five is going to have an automatic bid in that college football playoff. But if you kind of read the reports, increasingly it's looking like that expanded playoff isn't coming in the immediate future, maybe 2026. So we are stuck with this model for a while. And it's good to know that while Cincinnati certainly got some help, the ACC was way down with Clemson being out of it. The Pac-12 was its usual Pac-12 self. I think it's good for the college football playoff that all these group of fives know if we go undefeated, we're at least going to have a chance. We're going to need some breaks. We're going to have to win all our games. But there is a pathway there. On top of that, what I would also say is not only is there fresh blood, but there's kind of just enough new blood where it all kind of worked out perfectly. And it's crazy to me because, again, I said it a minute ago with Alabama. Nobody even thought Alabama was going to be in this playoff. And now just look at how the matchups are set. On one side of the bracket, you have Alabama versus Cincinnati. I mean, you talk about just from a narrative perspective, does it get any better than group of five versus big, bad, unbeatable Alabama? Georgia can't beat Alabama. Ole Miss can't beat Alabama. Florida can't beat Alabama. And now the little engine that could, and Cincinnati fans, I'm not saying that's who you guys are, but I am saying that is how it is going to be portrayed. I think Cincinnati being the four seed and getting Alabama as a one seed is just such a more interesting narrative than if Cincinnati even had to play Georgia, if Cincinnati had to play Ohio State, because Alabama has been the gold standard, and now Cincinnati will have a neutral field game to play them and to prove that they belong. On the other side, I mean, you just talk about a matchup of two big brand names, two big brand opponents, two coaches that everybody knows, again, I just think it's great because you have the David versus Goliath on one bracket in Alabama versus Alabama versus Cincinnati, and then you have the pseudo mini Goliath versus mini Goliath in Michigan and Georgia. Again, huge brands, historical brands, Heisman Trophy winners, Herschel Walker, Charles Woodson, Bo Schembechler. Now you got Kirby versus Jim Harbaugh in what should be a fun old school kind of smash mouth football from the past. And like, I think that is going to be a great way to cap off New Year's Eve in a college football playoff game in Miami with Michigan taking on Georgia. In terms of Michigan, let me just say this really quick, because I don't think I'm going to talk a ton about Michigan in terms of kind of the big takeaways going forward. I think this is great for Michigan as well, because it's still, I'm having trouble processing, right? Like, I'm having trouble processing the idea that Michigan is in the college football playoff. I talked about it before the Ohio State game. I said, look, I think they can beat Ohio State. I don't think they will, but I think it's possible. They beat Ohio State. After they do that, I keep saying, well, you know, Iowa, they're tough. They can force a bunch of turnovers. They might beat Michigan if Michigan's not ready. Michigan takes care of them. And so to see them in the playoff, it is just so surreal to me. And I know Cincinnati's kind of the little kind of Cinderella of this Final Four, if you will, of this college football playoff. I think Michigan's as good of a story as we've had in this college football playoff in a long time. And I just sit there and I say, I go back to last year, Michigan's playing Rutgers on a Saturday night. I'll never forget it. I was hosting Fox Sports Radio with Arnie Spanier, and Michigan needs, I think it was 2, 3, 4 overtimes to beat Rutgers. This is after they lost to Michigan State. This is after they got embarrassed by Indiana. And I remember just sitting there in that moment, and I probably talked about it on the podcast the next day, and I remember sitting there saying, it's over. It's done. This Harbaugh thing has come full circle. He comes in, guns blazing, year two, almost beats Ohio State, weird spot, it doesn't happen. We're now in year six, and he's needing double and triple overtime to beat Rutgers. And I just remember thinking, this is over. And to see Michigan on the podium on Saturday night in Indianapolis winning a Big Ten championship, it was just absolutely incredible to see and absolutely surreal. And so now you get that guy versus Kirby Smart. And for all intents and purposes, I will say I think Cincinnati can challenge Alabama in maybe a way that a lot of people don't. Let me also say this, by the way. If Cincinnati does not win against Alabama and it is not competitive, let's stop with the they didn't deserve to be there. Ohio State has lost big in national semifinals. Clemson got smoked last year in a national semifinal. Notre Dame got smoked in the national semifinal last year. Oklahoma has lost big in national semifinals. Let's please not do the whole Cincinnati didn't belong if they don't beat Alabama. But I do think realistically you're probably setting up for a national championship game that either features Alabama versus Georgia again, Kirby versus Nick again. Can Kirby finally take down Nick again? Or Harbaugh versus Saban, and it doesn't get much bigger than that. So after all this talk about all the new blood that we were going to have, we get that new blood, but it's still enough of kind of brand names and storylines that I think it's really sexy. Finally, what I would say, and I do think this is the most important part. So I'm not going to do like the incredible deep dive on both semifinals today and both college football playoff games and all the big bowl games today. We have another 3 weeks for that. But what I will say in terms of this college football playoff is I think we're setting up, and this is my biggest takeaway of what happened on Saturday as it pertains to the four that we have, Alabama, Michigan, Georgia, and Cincinnati. I think we're setting up for some fascinating semifinals, because the thing about the college football playoff in this four-team era, if we can be honest, we need to talk and be honest about one thing in this college football playoff era, and that's this. For all the excitement that the college football playoff creates, and we all watch it New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, whatever it is, the bottom line is going into most playoffs, we kind of know that one game is probably going to be ugly and going to be a blowout. Last year, Notre Dame gets destroyed by Clemson in the ACC championship game. They have to play Alabama. We kind of know they ain't beating Alabama, right? Year before, LSU, Joe Burrow, unbeatable. They play Oklahoma with Jalen Hurts. We kind of know Oklahoma ain't beating LSU this year. And there's been other games in the past. I mean, I remember back to when, I don't know, Michigan State played Alabama in the second year of the playoff, when, you know, Washington played. Like, you just kind of knew that some of these teams weren't going to win. Well, I look at these matchups now, and based on what I saw on Saturday, I think we're going to have two compelling matchups for two reasons. And what I would say, this is the first time that I can ever remember this happening. This is the first time that I can ever remember in any given year going into championship weekend, SEC championship, Big Ten championship, Big 12 championship, and having a very clear view on what the grand scheme of college football looks like, and having that complete grand view flipped on its head, and we have a completely different perspective on where college football is and what is going on just based on the SEC championship game alone, and really the Big Ten championship game as well. And so to me, this is a fascinating playoff because I believe the entire calculus of the college football season as a whole has changed. We came into championship weekend saying, it's Georgia and it's everybody else. You can put in whoever the other three teams are that you want, but nobody has a chance. Alabama ain't even going to be in the playoff, and they're probably, from a Vegas perspective, the second best team in college football. They're probably not even going to be there. Whoever gets in, good luck playing for second place against Georgia. Well, that was completely flipped on its head, and so to me, I am just so fascinated by this college football playoff for two very simple reasons, and there are two major questions going into this college football playoff that I believe makes it one of the most compelling fields of four that we've ever seen. The two big questions are this. The first one, what the heck happened with Alabama on Saturday, and is it sustainable? Because I said it a minute ago. I said, look, nobody has been more critical of Alabama, I believe, on the national scale than I've been. I've just kind of said for the last 3, 4, 5 weeks, I've said, this team is not built to win a national championship. This team cannot do it. The offensive line isn't good enough. The defensive backfield is not good enough. They're too inconsistent. One day the running game's great. One day the running game's terrible. One day they protect Bryce Young. One day they don't. Well, here's my question coming out of that Alabama-Georgia game. Did Alabama figure out its offensive line play, or was it a one-game aberration? Because if they figured out their offensive line play, they're the best team in college football. And if they didn't, then this whole field is wide open. Because think about just I can never remember, and there, I could be wrong, and you guys can DM me or hit me up at AaronTorresPodcastQuestions@gmail.com. I can never remember a team having such a glaring weakness going into a mega game like an SEC championship game, and that weakness just disappearing. Their weakness, their problem was straightforward. They couldn't block. And it wasn't just like, and it was so funny to watch that game and to see the reaction on social media, and you see all these national people saying like, well, you know, I picked Georgia because I just didn't think Alabama could block Georgia's defensive line. And it's like, yeah, nobody did. And I was one of them. I was wrong. But I'll tell you this. We had a 12-week sample size that said Alabama couldn't block anybody up front. They gave up 7 sacks against Auburn the other day, just a week ago in the Iron Bowl, 24-22. In 4 overtimes, they beat Auburn. So, like, the idea that, by the way, the week before that, 2 weeks before that, LSU, they have 6 total rushing yards. A couple weeks before that, they lose to Texas A&M. And so, like, the idea that we shouldn't have been, like, everyone was saying, never bet against Nick Saban. It's like, actually, betting against Nick Saban has been very profitable this year. Did not cover against Texas A&M, did not cover against LSU, did not cover against Arkansas, did not cover against Auburn with a backup quarterback. But then against Georgia, the best defensive line we believe in college football, they turn into the Great Wall of China. I don't know. What's the analogy here? They were impenetrable. And so to me, like, people were like, oh, Torres, look at you. You picked Georgia to win. Yeah, and based on what I knew coming into that game, I'd do it again 100 times over because there was nothing in the previous 12, 13 weeks that made me believe that Georgia was going to, that Alabama was going to be able to block Georgia. And so that to me is the single biggest question, probably the maybe even the second biggest question going into this college football playoff and why it's so fascinating. Was that Alabama offensive line performance a one-game aberration, or did they finally figure stuff out? Was it a one-game aberration where all week long they heard that they couldn't protect Bryce Young, that they couldn't stop Georgia, that Georgia had all the answers, that Georgia was going to destroy them? Was that a one-game aberration because of that, or did they figure things out? Because if they figured things out, then this is, in my opinion, by far the best team in college football, with by far the best player on the offensive side of the football in college football in Bryce Young, a future Heisman Trophy winner, and they're going to win another national championship if they have figured it out. But if it was a one-game aberration, and if they played their best game after hearing a week of just, you can't stop anybody, blah, 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 then this thing is wide open, and I think three of the teams could win it, and I think Cincinnati can give them a game in that college football semifinal. On top of that, There is another big storyline that, like, I think needs to absolutely be discussed, and I feel like it is not being discussed enough. Now, I know in Georgia, in Athens, Georgia, it's being discussed, but that is what is Georgia going to do at the quarterback position, okay? And so to even backtrack a little bit, let's go back to mid-August when I picked Georgia to win the national championship. Remember that, all that, how about my dogs? Dogs didn't look so good yesterday, okay? My dogs got hit by a car. They got hit by a car. It was called the Bama Express, okay? But even going back to why I picked Georgia to win the national championship, it wasn't because of their defense. It wasn't because of their run game. It was because of the fact that for the first time in the Kirby Smart era, Georgia had a real quarterback. Go back to last year. JT Daniels comes in at the end of the year. First of all, even backtrack. There's a kid named Stetson Bennett who's starting at quarterback. Looks good against Auburn, looks good against South Carolina, looks good against this team, looks good against that team, whoever it was. I can't even remember who he played early. I don't even think he played against South Carolina. But I bring it up because Stetson Bennett was Georgia's starting quarterback to start last season, and they were awesome. And then he ran into an NFL quarterback in Mac Jones at Alabama, and you could see he is not of the same caliber as Mac Jones, could not win that game. Georgia gets embarrassed. Then they play Florida a few weeks later. And I know it's easy to make fun of Florida now. Dan Mullen's gone. Florida had an NFL quarterback named Kyle Trask. Kyle Trask destroyed Georgia. Stetson Bennett could not keep up. You could see he was not the same caliber of player that Kyle Trask was. And so I bring this up because Stetson Bennett got benched last year for JT Daniels. And the reason I picked Georgia to win the national championship, you can go back and listen to those episodes, was because of the fact that Georgia finally had a quarterback. Then JT Daniels gets hurt early in the season. Stetson Bennett takes over, and he never gives up the job. And I have said over the last 5, 6, 7 weeks, I have said, I love Georgia. They were my pick to win the national championship. But I am just not sure that they can win a national championship with this guy quarterback. Maybe the defense is so good. Maybe the run game is so good. But at some point, somebody is going to make Stetson Bennett beat them through the air. And I don't know if he can do it. Maybe he can, but I'm not sure. Why do I bring it up? And it's because on Saturday, we learned Stetson Bennett can't win you a national championship. And I believe that Kirby Smart did make a tactical mistake on Saturday, not getting JT Daniels some reps. And I believe he will make a huge tactical mistake that could cost him a national championship if he does not play JT Daniels in this college football playoff. Because as I tweeted on Saturday, and maybe we get some information about JT Daniels that we don't know, but as I tweeted on Saturday, I don't know if JT Daniels can win Georgia national championship, but I know that Stetson Bennett can't. And so at some point, you have to make the move that Nick Saban made in that national championship. Remember the national championship game? Nick Saban, Tua, Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts is struggling, and Nick Saban went to the bullpen. He touches left hand, called the lefty. Tua comes in, wins him a national championship. A couple years ago, Clemson, 4-0, Kelly Bryant. Dabo Sweeney says, I got a better quarterback on my bench. I got to play Trevor Lawrence. They win a national championship. This year, Oklahoma, you could criticize Lincoln Riley for a lot. Spencer Rattler wasn't getting the job done. He went to the bench. He put in Caleb Williams. And so I bring all this up to say, this is Kirby Smart's moment. This is Kirby Smart's time. He already potentially cost his team a national championship a few years ago when he would not put in Justin Fields over Jake Fromm. I understand why that decision was made at the time. But JT Daniels is a fourth-year player in college. What is he, a fourth-year player in college football? He has started a ton of meaningful games. And if Kirby Smart does not play him, and after the game, Kirby Smart was asked about this, and he said, I have the utmost confidence in Stetson Bennett, which means one of four things. One, he's either completely trying to throw us off his scent, and he plans on playing JT Daniels in the playoff. That's why he didn't play him. He didn't want to put anything on film against Alabama. I think that's idiotic because I think it's you can't just throw a guy cold in against Michigan or Alabama. But one, Kirby Smart could be playing us all. Two, three, and four I think are much more realistic. Two, JT Daniels is still hurt and he doesn't want us to know. JT Daniels is not good enough and he doesn't want us to know. Or he's just really stubborn. But I bring all this up to say it's what I said at the beginning. The calculus of this entire season has completely changed with what happened on Saturday at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Alabama. And to me, that is going to be the most fascinating thing going forward in this college football playoff and why I believe we will have one of the most compelling college football playoffs ever. Because is Alabama fundamentally changed along the offensive line or did they just have a great day? And what does Georgia do at quarterback? Because I don't believe Georgia can win a national championship at quarterback. And if Alabama isn't fixed and if Georgia doesn't change their quarterbacks, I believe that the top three teams, I include Michigan, I think Michigan can beat Georgia if Georgia sticks with Stetson Bennett. I believe that Cincinnati can give Alabama a game if Alabama's offensive line is figured out. If Alabama's offensive line is figured out, I believe they're probably the best team in the country. If Georgia puts in JT Daniels and he looks like he did last year, they're probably the best team in the country. So I don't ever remember a season where so late in the year, the entire thought process of what we thought about the college football narratives completely changed. So I am absolutely fascinated. I'm absolutely excited for this college football playoff. I cannot wait for it to get started here on December 31st. I will say, by the way, again, we will have a full preview of all the big games coming up. But I am just fascinated by these two semifinals. I'll say this too. I think some of those New Year's Six games are going to be really interesting. For people who have not seen the schedule, we have Baylor Ole Miss in the Sugar Bowl. Baylor, of course, the Big 12 champ. We have Ohio State Utah in the Rose Bowl. We have Notre Dame Oklahoma State in the Fiesta Bowl. And we have Pitt Michigan State in the Peach Bowl. I'll tell you this. You want an early college football betting pick? By the way, go to DraftKings Sportsbook on that one. Use the link in my bio. Pitt is a 5-point favorite. Pitt throws the football. What do I tell you about Michigan State? Michigan State cannot stop the pass. So that would be a bet that I would put in right now, DraftKings Sportsbook. If you need the link, sign up right now. $1, one bet, one team. You know the deal. So fun set of games. I'm really excited. But I'll tell you, I am really excited for this playoff because I do believe that in most years, there's usually one team that's way better than everybody else. Sometimes there's two teams and occasionally there's three, but you kind of know at least one of the games is going to be a blowout. This year, I'm not sold. This year, I do kind of believe that we are headed for two entertaining semifinals. Credit Cincinnati, credit Michigan, credit, of course, Alabama, credit Georgia. All right, this is what I want to do. I want to take a quick break. I want to come back. I want to talk about the insanity of the college football coaching carousel, where it appears as though Oklahoma has a new head coach. It appears as though Miami is just in a very, very, very strange place. I will be right back. We're going to talk some Quinn Ewers as well. And, of course, Alabama basketball getting the big dub against Gonzaga. All right, we're going to get back to football in a minute. But before we do, I want to welcome back our favorite sponsor and your lady's favorite sponsor. That's right, I'm talking about Manscaped, the worldwide leader in men's below-the-waist grooming. And here's the great part. In addition to all of the other amazing products that I've told you about, they have some new stuff for the holidays, including an all-new ultra-premium body wash and 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner. Fellas, ladies, I am just telling you, it smells delightful. I have some in the shower. I have never smelt better. And here's the best part. You know what it is. If you go to manscaped.com, if you use promo code Taurus, 20% off plus free shipping just by using the code Taurus, only for listeners of the Aaron Taurus Sports Podcast. But first of all, before we get to the shampoo and conditioner, let's talk about what's going on down there. Fellas, I've talked to you about it before. Don't be gross. Don't be disgusting. You don't want that James Harden beard going on downstairs. You don't want that Santa Claus beard going on downstairs. So let me tell you about Manscaped's Performance Package 4.0. Fellas, if you don't know what's going on, I get it. I've been there. You know what's even worse than not knowing what to do down there? When you're trying to do it with the other product. When it's dark, when it's this, when it's that, when you're in the shower, you're trying to shave, you cut yourself, nicks, scratches, cuts. No, you can't have that. Thankfully, that's what the Performance Package 4.0 is for, a number of different products to have you looking good and smelling good down there. Performance Package 4.0 includes the signature Lawnmower 4.0, which is an electric trimmer for down there with proprietary skin-safe technology to reduce the cuts. It's waterproof. You can take it in the shower. You don't have to worry about leaving little hairs on the floor. That's gross, fellas. Lawnmower 4.0, part of the Performance Package 4.0. Performance Package 4.0 also includes the Crop Preserver and the Crop Reviver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant, moisturizer, and toner. It also comes with a pair of Manscaped anti-chafing boxers that'll leave your junk feeling fresh all day. As I've called it before, the perfect package for your package. Here's the cool part, though. In addition to the Lawnmower 4.0, in addition to the ball toner, the ball spray, the ball deodorant, there's some new products for the holiday season. Manscaped has dropped the Ultra Premium Body Wash. Listen, I just said it. I'm going to tell you again. They sent me a package. They sent me some of this stuff. It smells amazing. You'll come out of the shower. Your lady won't be able to keep her hands off of you. You won't be, I don't want to say you won't be able to keep your hands off yourself, but you might not be able to. Not my business what you do in your personal life. I'm just telling you, manscaped.com, promo code Torres. Ladies, the code works for you too. And I am telling you, the premium body wash and the 2-in-1 shampoo, absolutely incredible. The 2-in-1 shampoo also comes with key ingredients, benefits, all sorts of good stuff, hydrating, nourishing, etc. As good as, not even as good, better than any product that you are going to get anywhere else. Again, it's the holiday season. Fellas, you deserve to spoil yourself. Ladies, you need your man looking good, smelling good, feeling fresh, looking fresh, down there, up there, wherever. Manscaped.com is the answer. You got the Performance Package 4.0. That includes the Lawnmower 4.0 electric razor. That includes, on top of that, the new 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner and the body wash. It's incredible. It's amazing. And here is the best part. If you go to manscaped.com and you use promo code Torres, you got to use promo code Torres, you get 20% off plus free shipping courtesy of Manscaped just for listeners of the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast. So go to manscaped.com, promo code Torres, and get all the good stuff, including the brand new 2-in-1 body shampoo and conditioner, as well as the body wash. Your balls will thank you. I will thank you. Manscaped.com, promo code Torres. All right, everybody. I am back. Good to be back. By the way, Manscaped, again, promo code Torres. I'm just telling you. I'm not telling you what to do. Not telling you how to spend your money. But the deodorant, the body wash, the shampoo, it smells delicious. It smells delightful. Great gift if you're so inclined. Manscaped.com, promo code Torres. With that said, though, let's switch gears and let's go to the never-ending college football coaching carousel. Are you guys getting a little nauseous yet? Because this carousel just keeps spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning. And since the last time we recorded, two new developments as Oklahoma finally appears to have a head coach after Lincoln Riley left a week ago. Miami, they have a head coach, but they also have another guy that they kind of want. But this guy's under contract, but that guy's under contract, and we don't know what's going on. Miami, just a complete bizarre, weird, and in many ways, like, disgusting situation, which we'll get into in a minute. But let's start with Oklahoma, because Oklahoma, obviously, look, it goes without saying, a week ago, we know what happened. Lincoln Riley is the head coach. Lincoln Riley decides to leave for USC. We've talked about that. We've broken it down. That's in the rearview mirror. And since then, they have been looking for a head coach. And on Sunday, kind of the first real tangible reports that they have found their guy have come out as Brent Venables, the current defensive coordinator at Clemson. He has been there forever. It appears as though Brent Venables will be the next head coach. And so as we start to break down, as we start to look at it, as we start to decide from all angles whether we like it, whether we don't, I think this is one of those classic cases of the thing that I always talk about with you guys and girls. In life, two things can be true. And I think in the case of this Venables hire, I believe two things are in fact true. One, I don't totally love the hire, but on the other hand, Oklahoma was put in a really tough situation, and I think all things considered, they could have done much worse, and I understand why the decision was made. So let's get into it. Let's break it down. And first of all, a little bit of background on Brent Venables for those of you who do not know much about him. Midwest guy. He has been at Clemson seemingly forever. It feels like it's been forever, but it was only since 2012. And before he was at Clemson forever, he was at Oklahoma forever. He was on Bob Stoops' original staff in 1999, stayed there through 2012, and ultimately left the school. Ultimately ended up at Clemson. But this is a guy that knows the footprint, knows the region, knows the school, knows the program, knows all that stuff. Here is why I am not totally crazy about him as a hire. First-time head coach going into the toughest stretch, I believe, in Oklahoma football history. Oklahoma fans will disagree. You guys can disagree. Disagree with me. It's fine. Whatever. I don't care. First of all, in terms of the first-time head coach thing, I know a lot of Oklahoma fans will say, look, we are the program of first-time head coaches. Barry Switzer had never been a head coach when he took over for Bud Wilkinson as the head coach of the Oklahoma Sooners. He had previously been the offensive coordinator. He turned out pretty well, won a bunch of national championships. Bob Stoops had never been a head coach, won a bunch of national championships, won one national championship, made the playoff, made a couple other title games. Bob Stoops worked out pretty well. Not sure if you heard, Lincoln Riley had never been a head coach before he got to Oklahoma. So an Oklahoma fan saying that, I totally get it. I understand. What I would also say is this. you are about to hit the toughest stretch of Oklahoma football history, I believe, as you get set to enter the SEC. It may not be this year. It may not be next year. It may not even be the year after. But at some point, you are going into the SEC, and you will be going in with a first-time head coach, never been in that big boy seat before, not saying that he's capable. I'm just saying, in a perfect world, if it was up to me, I probably would have gone with somebody with a little bit more head coaching experience. I'm also not going to lie. I probably would have tried to get somebody with some more of an offensive background, although the reports are that he could bring Ole Miss offensive coordinator Jeff Lebby with him, because I do think the primary goal of any hire, while it shouldn't be about one player, a big part of this is keep Caleb Williams happy, keep Caleb Williams at Oklahoma, because I believe that is the best way to set up Oklahoma for long-term success. So that's really the only reason that I don't love the hire. Brent Venables doesn't scream super dynamic head coach, I'm the guy, I'm in charge. Like, even Marcus Freeman, like, we saw that video of Marcus Freeman, he gets named the head coach. Like, that guy just looks like a head coach. I don't know if it'll work, I don't know if it won't, but that guy just looks like a head coach. Brent Venables yelling and screaming, doing all these weird hand gestures. I don't know if it's going to work. First time head coach going to the SEC. At the same time, I get it. At the same time, I understand. And at the same time, I don't hate the hire either. First of all, context matters. When we do these coaching grades and this and that, you do have to kind of grade on a curve with Oklahoma, because it's what I talked about last week with Notre Dame. Notre Dame and Oklahoma are not in the same situations as LSU and USC were. You cannot grade their hires on the same scale as they were. LSU had 2.5 months to get their guy, and I'll be honest, I don't even know if they got their guy. I still think Lincoln Riley was their first choice, and they got hoodwinked at the last minute when USC stepped in. USC had 3 months to figure out the market, vet candidates, see who's right, see who's wrong, see who's interested. So, of course, those schools are going to end up with better head coaches or more obvious head coaches. I'm not saying one will be better than the other. Brent Venables could win a national championship before Lincoln Riley, for all I know. But I think we have to grade this differently because the circumstances were completely different. Oklahoma, 10 days ago, thought Lincoln Riley was going to be there for the next 20 years. And if he was going to leave, it'd be for the NFL. It'd be for the Dallas Cowboys. It'd be for Jerry Jones. It'd be for something like that. Nobody thought he was leaving for another head coaching job. And so given that they got thrown into this, I actually thought they showed a great deal of kind of poise and confidence and cool under fire. Didn't love the school president complaining about it. But Bob Stoops took over. Bob Stoops is like, I got this. Oklahoma's been great for 50 years. Oklahoma will be great for the next 50 years. We're going to be fine. So I give the school credit, and I do think that, like, we do have to kind of grade on a curve, because there was no way they could have prepared for this, because there was no way to think that Lincoln Riley was actually going to leave. I also do think there is some upside to this Venables hire. First of all, as I said, he was at Clemson forever, okay? And why that is important to me is this, is because, one, I believe, listen, first of all, even a backtrack. I think he's going to take over the defense. I think if Jeff Lebby, the offensive coordinator from Ole Miss, comes in, then he's just going to take care of the offense, and it's going to be kind of co-coaches, kind of the opposite of what they had at Oklahoma before when Lincoln Riley ran the offense and his defensive coordinator, Alex Grinch, ran the defense. So I think that works. I think that's good. And I would say on top of this, and I do think it matters, I know that Oklahoma has their footprint. I know they have their region in recruiting, Texas, Oklahoma, Southwest, but you're heading into the SEC. And while Brent Venables has ultimately never coached in the SEC, he's recruited against the SEC for the last 10 years at Clemson. He has gone into homes of players that are down to Alabama and Clemson, LSU and Clemson, Florida and Clemson, Georgia and Clemson. And he has sold the crap out of Clemson, and he has allowed Clemson to go ahead and get the players that they need to compete at the highest levels. And so when I look at why this hire could work, I do believe there's two reasons. One, let him take over the defense. Hopefully he's good. Hopefully he's awesome. Let Jeff Lebby, if he's really coming, take over the offense. Then from there, you see what happens on the field. But off the field, you needed a guy that was going to be able to go into kids' homes and explain why Oklahoma in the SEC is still the place to go, rather than Georgia, rather than whoever, Alabama, LSU, the more established brands. We will see if it works. I'll say this. I don't know if he's going to win a national championship, but ultimately, there was nobody that you could have hired that is going to guarantee that. Because again, as I said a minute ago, you start going back. USC had 3 months to figure this out. LSU had 2 months to figure this out. On and on and on and on and on. And so it'll be interesting to see. We'll see if the hire becomes official. Brent Venables is the head coach. And finally, what I would say is this. Oklahoma also, the other reason that I will defend them with this hire, they just had to make a move. because the transfer portal stuff is real now. Kids aren't waiting. We're going to talk about portal in a minute with Quinn Ewers, the former Ohio State quarterback. But Oklahoma's already lost 3, 4, 5 key players to the portal. Jaden Hazelwood, as I record, their leading receiver this year, has committed to Arkansas. And so I just bring it up to just say, you can't wait forever. And while you don't want to make any decision this big based on one player, you have to get somebody in place to convince Caleb Williams to stay at Oklahoma. Because the best chance that you have at long-term success at Oklahoma is to keep Caleb Williams. Brent Venables comes in. We'll see if he brings Jeff Lebby. If he does, I believe we are in a situation where Oklahoma could maintain in the Big 12 a very, very, very good program and build themselves nicely for the SEC. Again, I don't love it, but given the circumstances, I think they did about as well as they could. You know who's not doing as well as they could? Have you guys followed this story at the University of Miami? It is just insanity, okay? And so as I record here, there's so many different moving parts. And I don't want to spend a ton of time on this because this story is going to evolve. By the time you listen to this, there could be a new layer to this story. But ultimately, Miami is just the most fascinating story in college football right now. And I want to backtrack and I want to just kind of give you the context so you fully understand. But Miami, anyone over 30 remembers Miami being the best program in college football, okay? When Miami is operating at its highest level, it is no different than USC. It is no different than Alabama right now. It is no different than Ohio State. They can compete for national championships every year. But the problem with Miami is they've gotten a bunch of coaching hires wrong. They haven't been fully committed, kind of in this new era of college football where facilities matter and resources matter. And you got to pay this much for a coordinator, that much for a coordinator. Miami just hasn't been committed in a way that other schools have. Earlier this year, Kirk Herbstreit calls out the program, calls out the school, calls out the administration. And the administration kind of looks itself in the mirror and says, for the first time ever, we're ready to play big boy college football. If that means paying a coach $8 million a year, we'll pay him $8 million a year. That means paying a great defensive coordinator $2 million a year or $1.5 a year. We are going to do it. We are going to be tired. So they made their first move a few weeks ago. I talked about it on this podcast when they fired their longtime AD, Blake James. And the assumption was at the time, they're going to try to make a move aggressively in the AD market. And then from there, they are going to then pursue the biggest, best names in college football. I figured by the time they got the AD in place, they would probably wait until 2022, give Manny Diaz one more year, and kind of give him the Clay Helton treatment. Wait a year, first sign of trouble, fire him, get a head start on the 2022 cycle. Well, that's not what Miami has done at all. Instead, they have done the exact opposite, and they are, in my opinion, embarrassing themselves and making themselves look bad on a national spotlight. Okay, so as of right now, as I record, it is December 5th at about 8:45 Eastern time on Saturday, okay? 7:45, 8 o'clock Eastern time on Saturday, okay? Miami has yet to hire a head coach. They've yet to hire an AD. The AD, the person who runs the athletic department, there is currently nobody in place. Ironically, we just talked about Brent Venables. It appears as though Clemson's AD, who went to school at Miami, is going to be the next AD at Miami. I bring it up for this reason, though. There is no AD in place, and right now there is a group that is a combination, I believe, of rogue boosters with no oversight from the athletic department or minimal oversight from the athletic department because nobody's running it, as well as former players, and I love the former Miami players. I know many of them well. I know Santana Moss well. I know Delvin Brown, who played in the early 2000s well. I love those guys. I respect them. But the combination of powers at Miami is trying to get Mario Cristobal to come be the head Miami coach without an AD. They're trying to hire a coach without an AD. And the big problem is this. They currently have a sitting head coach named Manny Diaz. And so let me break it down. Let me talk about it. I kind of just hit on all of it anyway. But Manny Diaz is currently the sitting head coach. I'm not going to sit here and defend Manny Diaz and make him out to be the next Vince Lombardi, okay? Manny Diaz was kind of hired under weird circumstances. Mark Richt retires. They rush into the next hire. They name Manny Diaz the head coach of Miami like an hour after Mark Richt retires, okay? He just finished his third year at Miami, goes 6-7 in year one, 8-3 in year two, 7-5 this year. I said it when they fired the AD. I don't think Manny Diaz is a long-term answer at Miami. I do think given the circumstances, though, he did about as well as anybody could have possibly expected at Miami this year, given what they went through, okay? Remember, De'Aaron King was their starting quarterback. He gets hurt. Cameron Harris, their starting running back. He gets hurt. The Bolden kid, safety, transfer from USC, best defensive player. He gets hurt. And despite all of that, Miami still finished 7-5. Now, I know when you're competing, when you're used to winning national championships, 7-5 is not acceptable. But in their final six games, they went 5-1. They lost one game by a field goal. They lost one game where they missed a field goal at the end of regulation that would have won the game. So they're one kick away from being 8-4. And while Manny Diaz is still the head coach, without an athletic director, they are publicly pursuing Mario Cristobal, the head coach. And if you're not on social media or you did not follow this on Sunday, it is one of the craziest stories I've ever seen. Because Miami doesn't have an AD. Two, they do have a head coach. Three, there is a very public name that they are pursuing. Now, to be clear, for people who don't know, Mario Cristobal, Oregon head coach, Mario Cristobal, former Miami football player, okay? Mario Cristobal is currently the head coach at Oregon, and I'll also blame Mario Cristobal on this. I believe as we record here, he is deciding, he is waiting to see, but my understanding is there is a contract offer on the table. He played at Miami. He's thinking about leaving. He loves Oregon, but it has just been a crazy story across social media because Miami doesn't have an AD. They do have a head coach, and Mario Cristobal hasn't come out and denied it. And so I'll say even dating back to Saturday, I started to see a little bit of buzz on this because the number one radio host in Oregon, a guy named John Canzano, came out and reportedly he tweeted that if Mario Cristobal goes to Miami, Oregon's top target is going to be Chip Kelly from UCLA. And we know the backstory with Chip Kelly. But I just bring it up to say, as soon as the number one radio host in Oregon said, if Mario Cristobal leaves, that's when it piqued my interest because I was like, wait a second now. If this guy would not tweet that if he did not believe it was at least a possibility. But it is craziness, and I'll just say this. I think the way Miami is operating is absolutely embarrassing. They have a sitting head coach. They have a head coach who is currently the head coach at Miami who is out on the road recruiting on behalf of Miami right now as I record. And what is he doing? He's out there with the U on his little shirt and telling everybody why you got to come here right as the school is chopping his legs out from under him. And so I'm not saying he's the right fit. I'm not saying he's going to win them national championships. I'm not saying if you want Mario Cristobal not to go get him. But what they are doing very publicly, and there's a ton of leaks, it's because there's no AD, but this thing has more leaks than the Titanic, where they are publicly courting Mario Cristobal, and if they can't get Mario Cristobal, then they're going to bring back Manny Diaz, but they won't fire him on the chance that they don't get Mario Cristobal. But if they get Mario Cristobal, Manny Diaz is out. And so to me, the way that they are treating him is absolutely embarrassing, and it goes back to something I talked about last week. I was not one of these people that was outraged that Brian Kelly and Lincoln Riley left Notre Dame and Oklahoma the way they did. I wish there was a clean, easy way to have that breakup, but there isn't. And in the world of the early signing period, you have to make these moves right now because if you do not make these moves right now, then guess what happens? You lose out on your recruiting class, you lose a whole cycle of recruits, and you fall behind the eight ball. And so I had no problem when Brian Kelly left for Notre Dame. I wish he could have stayed three more days to see if they made the playoff? Of course. But at some point, you have to rip off the Band-Aid and you have to go. But this is a perfect example why I don't blame them. It's because in this business, there is no loyalty one way or the other, right? Everybody talks about, oh, the coaches have no loyalty to the players. Well, the players don't really have loyalty to the coaches either. Because the second you can hit the portal, the second you're not happy, the second you're not playing, you bounce. And I'm not blaming the players. I'm not saying they're wrong. But that's the truth. Coach flies across the country, spends 3-4 years talking to you, texting you, this, that, the other thing. 2 weeks in, you decide you're not happy. You bounce. So there's no loyalty between the players to the coaches. There's no loyalty between the coaches and the players. And there is clearly no loyalty between the administration and coaches. So do I blame Brian Kelly for leaving? No. Everybody's blaming Brian Kelly. Never forget, Brian Kelly was the guy who in 2016 had a down year. Couple years after winning, almost winning a national championship, they finished second place, lose to Alabama in the BCS title game. Notre Dame fans ran a full-page ad in the newspaper calling for the school to fire Brian Kelly. But Brian Kelly's supposed to be loyal to you now? Brian Kelly's supposed to be loyal to you? Give me a break. And it's the same with Manny Diaz. And this is why I don't blame these guys. Because the second that you do something wrong, the second that you have a losing year, the second that the program's trending in the wrong direction, people are trying to get you out of that seat. And the second that they have the opportunity to get in someone that they perceive better, they're going to do it. And so to me, go do your thing, Brian Kelly. Go do your thing, Lincoln Riley. Hell, Manny Diaz, you want to quit and bounce? Go do your thing. The problem is you ain't going to get your buyout. But I just want to say, like, for the Miami perspective, I think it's embarrassing. People would otherwise would say otherwise. I just don't like how it went down. And I'll also blame Mario Cristobal. I understand that this is a tough moment in his life. I understand that he is trying to figure out what he wants to do with the next chapter of his career. Does he want to go home? Does he want to stay? What does he want to do? This, that, the other thing. I'm just telling you, I am not a fan of how this whole thing went down. I don't like it, and I don't like how Miami is handling themselves. Really quick, one last coaching note, and I'm not going to spend any time on this, but I just want to put it out there because I have a feeling I'll be talking about it in the future. Did you see who got fired on Sunday? A guy named Joe Brady. Joe Brady is the head coach, or was the offensive coordinator, of the Carolina Panthers. Why is that relevant to this show? He was also the offensive. He was the passing game coordinator. LSU fans get mad when you call it the offensive coordinator. He was the passing game coordinator for LSU when they won the 2019 national championship, and LSU fans are he leaves LSU, goes to Carolina. He gets fired on Sunday. I don't really blame him. When your quarterbacks are Teddy Bridgewater, Sam Darnold, and who else? Cam Newton. It's going to be tough to win in the National Football League when you're going up against Russell Wilson and Lamar Jackson and whoever else, Aaron Rodgers every week. So he is out, but that is just a name to keep an eye on because guess what? LSU is going to need an offensive coordinator. Auburn needs an offensive coordinator. There are a lot of places that Joe Brady could end up, and it would not shock me if he ends up being one of the highest paid coordinators in college football come next year. Listen, guys, I got to roll. I'll be right back. We're going to talk a little Quinn Ewers, the transfer from Ohio State. I think this is a very interesting story. We'll wrap on some college hoops with Nate Oates, maybe even a little Penny Hardaway, my old buddy. I will be right back. All right, everybody, I'm back. Good to be back. Let's do one more football topic, and then we will get out of here on a little college basketball as Nate Oates, Alabama, take care of business. And we'll talk a lot about that at the end of the show. But I do want to do one more college football topic, and it is related to the transfer portal. And look, guys and girls, this is the new world that we live in, right? I talked about it a lot during basketball season, but I said, like, this is now a topic on shows like the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast. After basketball last year, we talked a lot about Sevier Wheeler going to Kentucky, Kellen Grady going to Kentucky, Marcus Carr to Texas, Kofi Coburn when he hit the portal, on and on and on and on and on. Now it is translated to college football, where this is the first offseason with the one-time transfer rule, and college football transfer portal stuff is taking off like wildfire. Spencer Rattler last week, we talked about it, and there is no bigger piece of news. Then on Friday, we got some mega transfer portal news as Quinn Ewers, who was the number one quarterback in the high school class of 2022, he announced in August that he was reclassifying, enrolling early at Ohio State. He gets to Ohio State in August, and after like 5 months, basically decides, deuces, I'm out, I'm transferring. And it's a crazy story, and there was a lot of strong reaction to it. So let's get into it and let's break it down. Because what I would tell you is, you know, I've been doing this media stuff for a long time, and it's very rare that in 2021, I see a story that I'm genuinely surprised by the reaction to, right? Like, this is 2021. Everyone has a strong opinion at all times. We have social media. We put it out. And so it's very rare that I see something that I am genuinely surprised by as it pertains to basically anything involved in sports. But with Quinn Ewers, I was stunned by the reaction to it, and not so much from Ohio State fans. Ohio State fans, I know you're listening. I understand your frustration. You thought you were going to have this kid for 2 or 3 years. He was the number one quarterback. He's maybe capable of winning a Heisman Trophy. So I understand your frustration. I was surprised, though, by the reaction from the media. I was surprised by the reaction from other fans. And most of it stems from how this all came together. And so as a little backstory, let me just catch you up. As I said, Quinn Ewers was the number one high school quarterback in the high school class of 2022, which means that he should be a senior right now, getting ready to graduate. He was committed to Ohio State. He had previously been committed to Texas, decommits, goes to Ohio State. And he was planning on going this coming year. But then what happened was NIL got put into place in college sports. And if you remember, this was the kid that was playing high school football in Texas. And high school athletes in Texas were not allowed to make NIL money. And so this was a big story back in early August, mid-August, late August, where basically he came out and said, look, I wasn't planning on leaving high school early. I want to go compete for a state championship with my brothers. I'm from Texas. I'm from Dallas. This means a lot to us. But if I stay in high school sports with the rules that they currently are in the state of Texas, I will be leaving life-changing money on the table by not going to play college football. And if you remember, he kind of threw out, like, I think I can make upwards of $1 million. Now, we don't know exactly how much he made, but he said, look, I have this kind of setup. I have this endorsement deal. I have a company that wants me to, that will give me equity into their company. And so he made the decision to leave for Ohio State. I think it's important to note right then and there, this is why I was not surprised. If you just go back to the decision to reclassify, it was never a football decision. It was always a money decision. It was always about dollars and cents. It was always about leaving millions of dollars potentially, or at the very least $1 million on the table by playing high school football this year. If it was about football, he wouldn't have gone to Ohio State. Not because he's not a talented player, not because he's not good, but Ohio State had three different quarterbacks that were by technicality freshmen on this year's roster. Remember, Justin Fields graduated this past year, goes on to the NFL, Chicago Bears, whatever. C.J. Stroud was his backup as a redshirt freshman last year. They have another redshirt, or they as a true freshman last year, redshirt freshman this year. They have another redshirt freshman named Jack Miller this year, who actually just announced his transfer as well. On top of that, they brought in a quarterback in the class of 2021 named Kyle McCord. So you have three different quarterbacks, all freshmen, going into this season outside of Quinn Ewers. And so that's why it wasn't surprising to me. Because to me, and I don't know the family, I have no inside information on this, but to me, I never really got the sense that it was a football decision. I always got the sense that it was a money decision. It was about money first, and that we'll figure out the football stuff later. Now, in a perfect world, you kind of hope they're 2-1, right? You pick the school that's best for you. You pick the school where you can make some NIL money. It's one big, happy, kumbaya family. I never got the sense that that was the case with this story, though. He goes to a school where there are three freshman quarterbacks already on the roster. We already know that Ohio State has a pretty good track record under Ryan Day, that one of them is going to win the job and one of them was going to ball out. And so to me, I always saw this as two completely different things. Hey, if I win the starting quarterback job, that's great. But this is really about the money. We'll figure out the football after. And so you could probably guess what happens from there. C.J. Stroud gets the job. He balls out. He's going to be a Heisman finalist. And now this kid's kind of sitting around like, dude, I just did my year. If I had enrolled on a normal calendar, that would mean I'd be enrolling next year and I'd only have to sit behind C.J. Stroud for 1 year. But now I already used 1 year of eligibility. I'm going to have to use another year of eligibility, and I'm not getting on the field till year three. And so to me, that was why I was genuinely shocked by the reaction from college football fans. Like, oh my God, how could he do this? He committed to this. He did that. And I said, like, did we really think that the number one high school quarterback in high school football in 2021 was going to wait 3 years to get on the field? Because I never got that sense. Again, for the last time, I'm not going to keep repeating myself. I got the sense, hey, I'm going to come get my money. If it works out, cool. And if not, we got this one-time transfer rule. And I'm bouncing with that check in hand, and I'm going somewhere else and spending all my money somewhere else. And so he announced that he's leaving. Now the interesting part, and again, I guess I would even backtrack by saying, I don't really understand the frustration. I mean, I guess people are mad that he took the NIL money, but this was what was going to happen with NIL. People are mad that he decided to transfer without even playing. He had two full snaps the entire year. Well, this is what the one-time transfer rule is. I've been hearing for years you want the one-time transfer rule. I've been hearing for years you want the NIL. To be clear, I'm in favor of both. But we should have all known this kind of stuff was going to happen. I told you 2 years ago. I actually used the example of Justin Fields. I said, imagine how much money Justin Fields would have made as a Georgia boy committing to play Georgia football, and he would have given it all up to transfer to Ohio State. So this is all a 2021 version of what I was telling you was going to happen 3, 4, 5 years ago. So I don't understand the outrage. I don't understand why people were surprised. The number one quarterback in America was never waiting 3 years to step on the field, or at the very least even compete for the job, because it's not like Ryan Day is going to give him the job over C.J. Stroud when C.J. Stroud is about to be a Heisman finalist. And so now let's get to the fun part, and let's talk about where he could potentially end up, because it's really interesting, right? I saw Pete Thamel was the one who broke this story. Pete Thamel, actually dating back to August, broke the story that he was going to leave high school football this year to play at Ohio State. Full circle, Pete Thamel was the one who broke the story that he was leaving Ohio State to transfer. And Pete Thamel put out three schools, Texas A&M and Texas Tech. And keep in mind, this kid is from Texas. He's from the Dallas area. And what I would say is this. I don't really have a ton of inside information on this, but I kind of sort of feel like this is one of those, like, in college basketball, you get these sometimes, right? Where, like, you start to hear rumors and you start to put puzzle pieces together. And sometimes, like, stuff is done, before you even realize that anything is going on. Like, I remember, I'll tell you a quick side story. We'll get back to Quinn Ewers, and ironically, it has to do with Texas. But I remember Marcus Carr last year. I remember Marcus Carr before he even withdrew from the NBA draft. I was kind of being told, like, behind the scenes, like, yeah, Marcus Carr is going to be Texas's starting point guard next year. And I was like, he's in the NBA draft. They're like, he's going to withdraw. It's already done. It's just a matter of time. He's waiting on a few other things from the NBA. But if he doesn't hear what he likes, he's coming back to Texas. It's already done. And so I bring it up because sometimes this stuff is already done. And so I thought it was – I understand why Pete Thamel put out three different schools. But can we be honest for a second? I feel pretty confident. And again, call me out if I'm wrong on this. I'm almost certain the kid's going to be the Texas quarterback next year. He's going to a place where he can win the job and have success right away. And why is it's real simple. And to be clear, when I say it's a done deal, I'm not accusing Steve Sarkisian of anything. I'm not accusing anybody of lying. But let's just break it down very simply. First of all, Texas A&M, I can tell you a few things. One, they had the kid Haynes King that got hurt this year that started the year. I know for a fact that that staff really likes that kid, that they don't believe that we got to see how good that kid could be, and that they believe he is the kind of kid that can lead you to an SEC championship. Don't know if he will. They believe that he can. So he's coming back next year. He got hurt this year. On top of that, they have a kid committed for 2022 named Connor Wegman, who's really good, that they're really excited about. And so to me, I don't think Texas A&M is a realistic landing spot for him. I don't think Texas Tech is really a landing spot for him. And I know that there's reports that his high school coach is going to go there and this, that, the other thing. Here's the bottom line. Think about it like this. Number one high school quarterback in America, okay? $1 million in NIL. 100,000 followers or whatever on Instagram. Does that strike you as the kind of kid that is going to put his entire career in the hands of a first-year, first-time head coach at Texas Tech that was the Baylor linebackers coach next year? At Texas Tech, by the way. So you mean to tell me he's going to go play for like the 6th or 7th or 8th most recognizable Big 12 brand? No disrespect, Texas Tech fans, but it's the truth. Maybe it happens. I just don't see it. To me, I think it's Texas. I think it's already done. I tweeted it out the day that we saw that he was transferring. I'll be honest. I kind of get the sense that he's going to be the starting quarterback. And here's why. A couple things. One, like I just said a minute ago, it doesn't make sense for the number one quarterback in America to go to Texas Tech, okay? Or TCU, or SMU, or Baylor, or wherever. It just doesn't. When you're that high profile, you go to high profile schools. Again, go back to when Justin Fields transferred from Georgia. You know, you started to hear weird small schools, I think Mississippi State maybe, this, that, the other thing. And then Ohio State got involved, and you're like, oh, yeah, that guy's going to Ohio State. He was the number one or number two quarterback in the country behind Trevor Lawrence. He's a baller. He should have been starting for Georgia. He's going to Ohio State. End of ball game. Ohio State offers, you're done. So, one, I just think there's the Texas element of it. Big brand, big school, big state. If you're making great NIL money at Ohio State, you'll make great NIL money at UT. Two, I don't know if you remember, but Steve Sarkisian, like throughout the year, Steve Sarkisian played two quarterbacks, Hudson Card and Casey Thompson. Neither of them was that impressive. Neither of them was that good. And Steve Sarkisian, like, pretty openly was like, wouldn't commit to either one of them long term. And so, again, I'm not saying that Steve Sarkisian, that it's 100% done. I'm not saying that that he did anything illegal by reaching out or contacting or doing anything in. I'm just saying. Just put the common sense together. This kid came to college early for NIL money. He's from Texas. He was committed to Texas. Steve Sarkisian, for all his criticism, he's the quarterback whisperer. He's the quarterback guru. He's whatever. I think there's another factor in this as well. Quinn Ewers comes in next year, wins the job at Texas. What does that mean for the future? Well, there's a pretty good quarterback in the class of 2023 named Arch Manning, Archie Manning's grandson, Peyton and Eli's nephew. And so if you think about it, the Manning family is very tactical, very well thought out. I don't think they want to send Arch somewhere where he is going to have to go in right away, start, be the program savior, whatever. Not saying that means it's Bama, not saying it means it's Clemson, not saying it means this, not saying it's that. I think they want him to go to a place where he can compete for the job, but I don't think they'd be upset if he can sit for a year and learn from somebody else. So Quinn Ewers transfers to Texas, all hypothetical, I'm just saying. 2023, you get Arch Manning in. Hopefully, ideally, in a perfect world, he supposedly has a great relationship with Steve Sarkisian. learns from Quinn Ewers. Quinn Ewers leaves after his junior year, and Arch Manning takes over. Again, that last part was a little bit hypothetical. I'm going long. I didn't plan on talking 13 minutes on Quinn Ewers, but I'm just sitting here saying, to me, I don't know, but it feels like it's done. Texas makes the most sense. They're not committed at quarterback. They're trying to start over fresh under Steve Sarkisian. Sark is a quarterback guru. This kid was already committed to Texas. I think that's where he ends up. All right, this one I want to do. Take one last quick little break. We'll be back. We'll talk a little Bama Gonzaga college hoops. All right, everybody. I am back. Good to be back. And I do want to switch gears. And I do want to wrap with a little college hoops because obviously this show has been very college football heavy over the last 4, 5, 6 weeks. Once college basketball has started. Listen, here's the bottom line. I know a lot of you are like, oh, Torres, you need to talk more college basketball. I'm going to continue to talk college basketball. College football is so insane right now between the playoff, the coaching carousel, and the transfer portal. There's just a lot to talk about. But just know I'm watching everything. I'm thinking about everything. I'm talking to people in the business. We had our first coaching job opening, by the way, with Maryland earlier this week. But I do want to talk about what happened this weekend. I do want to talk about the results on the court, and there were two results that I believe really are pretty important in the grand scheme of college basketball. We'll get to Penny Hardaway and my Memphis Tigers in a minute, but let's start with the Alabama Crimson Tide basketball team, because we talked about football earlier. Football beats Georgia, SEC championship game, not sure if you heard, Bryce Young is going to win the Heisman, and then from there, the team's flying home, and oh, by the way, just a little ho-hum, 91-82 victory over the Gonzaga Bulldogs in Seattle. And so this was a mega win for Alabama, and this was a mega win for the SEC, and I want to talk about it, and I want to break it down, because Alabama, man, my, oh, my, oh, my. You talk about a program on the rise in basketball. Alabama basketball is here to stay. And what struck me about the game as I watched it is a few things. One, final score, Alabama 91, Gonzaga 82. Alabama was up by 16 points at halftime. They were up 51-35. Gonzaga made a little bit of run, but Alabama held on for the victory. Why is that important? It is because of the fact that Alabama just went essentially on the road. I know it was technically a neutral court. It was technically in Seattle. They went basically on the road and beat a top five team, and there was nothing fluky about it, okay? First of all, this is not a knock on Gonzaga. This is not Gonzaga's overrated, Gonzaga's terrible, Mark Few is overrated, fire him, get rid. No. Gonzaga's a really good team. I saw them twice in Las Vegas last week in person. In the first game, they destroyed UCLA. In the second game, they easily could have beaten Duke in a top five matchup. So this isn't about Gonzaga being overrated or Mark Few this or Gonzaga that or whatever. This is about Alabama being a really, really, really good basketball team. And what was so impressive to watch is that they dictated tempo, they dictated what they did, and they just did what Alabama basketball does, what Alabama basketball did last year under Nate Oates. 91 points overall, three different players with at least 17 points, the guys that you would hope would play well, Jaden Shackelford, 28 points, 6 of 8 from 3, 6 of 7 from 3 in the first half, I might add, Javon Quinterly, former McDonald's All-American point guard, 17.6 assists. J.D. Davison, 20 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists off the bench. 13 of 34 from 3, 38%. A lot of passing, a lot of cutting, a lot of ball movement. Alabama looked like Alabama last year. And what stands out is not only did Alabama look good, but it's not as though Gonzaga looked bad. It's not as though something fluky happened. It's not as though Gonzaga was their best player wasn't playing. It's not as though they went 1 for 14 from 3. Gonzaga scored 82 points. Gonzaga went 9 of 23 from 3. Now, they didn't shoot the free throws really well, but the rebounding advantage was about the same. They only turned the ball over 12 times. The team that I saw in Vegas that destroyed UCLA and easily could have beaten Duke, they played a pretty good game on the on a neutral court against Alabama, and Alabama was just a better team. And so when I think about Alabama basketball, as weird as it sounds, I think you can make the case that outside of maybe the SEC championship game last year when they beat LSU to clinch the SEC title in Nashville, I would argue that this is the biggest win of the Nate Oates era. And that sounds crazy. They're coming off a dual SEC title. They won the SEC regular season last year. They won the SEC tournament last year. They beat LSU in the regular season. They beat Arkansas at home. They swept Kentucky. How could this be the biggest win of the Nate Oates era? Well, to me, it's actually pretty simple. It's because in the history of college basketball, there's been a lot of teams that have won conference championships, okay? I mean, Kevin Ollie won a freaking national championship at UConn. We don't have to talk about Kevin Ollie, but Kevin Ollie, not John Wooden, okay? You go on and on down the list. Billy Kennedy, do you remember him at Texas A&M like just 3 years ago? That dude won an SEC regular season title at Texas A&M. John Brady, now you probably don't even remember him. He was at LSU. He coached Big Baby Davis. He won an SEC regular season title. Don't think they're building a statue for John Brady. Why am I bringing this up? It's to say that there have been a lot of teams that have won a conference championship, okay? There are a lot of teams that have had a good run, a good 2-3-4 weeks, a good NCAA tournament, whatever. What Nate Oates is doing now is staying power, though. Because remember, this Alabama team, as awesome as they were, and as awesome as they looked against Gonzaga the other night, it's not as though this team returned intact this year. They lost, the SEC Player of the Year last year. Some guy named Herbert Jones, who's now starting games for New Orleans. They lost John Petty, who was a stalwart in the program. He was there for 4 years, played for Avery Johnson, played for Nate Oates. And so you start to look at this program and you say, and I'll be honest, I was guilty of it as well. You start to look at the program and say, they're going to be really, really, really good in 2021, 2022. But can they maintain that level? Can they maintain everything that we hope that we saw last year? Because that is a tough ask. SEC regular season title, SEC tournament title, best season since 2004 when they made the Elite Eight. There's no way they can top it. Well, look at it now. They're 7-1, just beat Gonzaga in Seattle, took care of Miami, and are awesome. Their only loss was to Rick Pitino, who you could criticize Rick Pitino for a lot of things. He's one of the greatest college basketball coaches in the history of the sport. And all of a sudden you look up and you say, wait a second now. This team is just as good. They look just as athletic, just as fast. They play just as quick. They shoot just as many threes. They defend the ball well. They have veterans in Jaden Shackelford. They have veterans in Javon Quinterly. Both those guys were awesome on Saturday night. JD Davison was awesome on Saturday night. There is no reason that this program cannot be not only what it was last year, but build upon that. And that's the great thing about this. This is why I'm talking about it. I don't care about one win against Gonzaga, but it wasn't about the one win against Gonzaga. What it was about for me was that it is becoming increasingly obvious. Nate Oates, he ain't building a team that can win here and there and play a cool style and shoot a lot of threes and they make SportsCenter. No, he is building a program that can be one of the best, not only in the SEC, but in the country. SEC regular season title last year, SEC tournament title last year. Go to Seattle, neutral court. Beat Gonzaga in the state of Washington. And you know what's scary? First of all, this team is awesome. I don't think they're slowing down. The SEC is awesome, which we're going to get into in a minute. But you know what else is crazy? Anyone follow college basketball recruiting? I know I talk a lot of college football recruiting, or at least I talk some on this show. College basketball recruiting. Let's have a little heart-to-heart on college basketball recruiting right now. Because you know who has the number 3 ranked recruiting class in 2022? It's the Alabama Crimson Tide. Duke is number 1. Arkansas with their class, which is awesome in its own right, is number 2. Kansas is number 4. USC is number 5. Michigan 6. Ohio State 7. Kentucky 8 with just 3 commits. Alabama has the number 3 ranked recruiting class in the country. So SEC dual championship last year, regular season, postseason. Beat Gonzaga. And it doesn't guarantee anything this year. I'm not saying they're going to win the national championship. But you start to, it's almost like, and it's ironic we're talking about Mario Cristobal, but Mario Cristobal is the one, he's very adamant. For him to build Oregon into a national championship contender, you've got to stack recruiting class on top of recruiting class on top of recruiting class. Well, what Nate Oates is doing is stacking literal and figurative win on literal and figurative win. Win the SEC, win the SEC tournament, make the Sweet 16. Now you beat Gonzaga. Now you got a number 3 ranked recruiting class in the country. And eventually, you break through and get to an Elite Eight. Eventually, you break through and get to a Final Four. And eventually, maybe you break through and get to a national championship. So I don't want to be overly hyperbolic. But I don't think you can undersell how big that win was for Alabama. Because it shows that last year wasn't a fluke. that last year wasn't a coincidence, that all the stars didn't align perfectly, that Alabama is awesome, and they're going to continue to be that way going forward. Let me add this, too. Let me just say one thing. The SEC is awesome in basketball this year, okay? Like, the SEC, I don't think people realize, is really good in basketball this year. Arkansas is 8-0 right now. LSU is 8-0 right now. Arkansas won its preseason conference tournament. They won the Hall of Fame Classic. LSU won a tournament in down in Florida where they took care of a good Wake Forest team and a good Penn State team. By the way, Auburn 7-1. Only loss was to UConn in triple overtime, a double overtime, whatever it was. Great game. Kentucky has not lost since they lost to Duke on opening night. Tennessee has been, they just won at Colorado. Like, Tennessee is awesome with Kennedy Chandler. I'll add this. I've been critical of my boy Mike White. I have been critical of Mike White. But he kind of stopped recruiting the five-star kids that want to be in and out in a year. And he went out and got some veterans, got some older players in the transfer portal. Mike freaking White has Florida at 6-1 right now with a couple really nice wins. They beat Florida State. They beat Ohio State the other day. Florida's looking pretty good. And so we're going to get into conference play here momentarily, and we'll get into the next 2-3 weeks. We'll start to really get a feel for who's good, who's not, all that stuff. I'm just bringing it up to say Alabama's awesome, and the SEC in basketball is awesome as a whole. Whew. Really quickly, one last topic. Penny Hardaway, Memphis Tigers. Here's the deal, right? I did the Penny Hardaway deep dive the other day, and I don't want to pile on. But Memphis is a dumpster fire right now, okay? So Memphis the other day, I talked about him on the podcast. You guys loved it. I got a ton of feedback on that one. Memphis lost to Georgia, at Georgia, 82-79. And I watched that game, and it was sloppy, and it was ugly, and they looked disorganized, and whatever. And so why do I bring up Memphis? Well, it was because on Saturday, they played at Ole Miss, who isn't even a good team by SEC standards. You know what happened on Saturday? They ended up losing 67-63. They fall to 5-3 overall. And my, oh my, oh my, is Memphis a complete mess. And I try not to pile on, and I try not to be too mean. First of all, you lose 67-63. Here are the stats. They finished 2 of 11 from 3. They shot 38% from the field. They did rebound the crap out of the ball, plus 6 in rebounds. 15 assists, 20 turnovers. Here is the stat that blew my mind. In that game against Ole Miss, Memphis shot, are you ready for this? 23 of 37 from the free throw line. And so listen, I could criticize Memphis for a lot. If they had just made their free throws, you just hit 70%, you win that game and improve to 6-2 overall. But instead, they're 5-3. And here is the crazy part. Penny now, I don't know if Penny is feeling heat. I don't know if he doesn't care. I don't know if he's trying to deliver a message through the media. I don't know if he's trying to get himself fired. But he is saying all sorts of crazy stuff in the media right now. But what I'll also say in defense of Penny is I don't think he's wrong on this. So first of all, he was asked about, after the game, everything that's going on. And this is what he said kind of about the entire situation. He said a couple things. A couple things that stuck out to me as it pertained to what Penny Hardaway had to say after the game. Is that Penny Hardaway was asked about the entire situation. And Penny Hardaway, craziness. I cannot believe that he said this. He said, the biggest problem right now, let me make sure I have this quote correctly. Biggest problem we have right now at Memphis is that our veterans aren't willing to help the young guys. That's not how it's supposed to be. We could be up 2 points and you'll have three people on the sideline talking negative to teammates and quitting because they haven't touched the ball. That's every single game we've had this year. It's sad, really. On top of that, he said we have character issues. Listen, he said that, and on top of this, and this is important, he did an interview with The Athletic. I've never heard anything like what he said. This is some of what Penny Hardaway said to The Athletic. He said, "We've got so much negativity in the locker room right now with veterans being jealous. Everybody's trying to get to the NBA off the ranking we had, but nobody is willing to sacrifice minutes, touches, everything. It's been miserable. You can imagine that a 17-year-old is thinking as he's trying to figure it out," obviously referencing Amani Bates, who of course reclassified and is 17 years old. He also said this. He said he declined to name names. He said, "I don't want to do that, name names. I don't want to have to deal with angry parents," which is an incredible line. But as he goes on and on, this is what he said. "There's a group of people on this team that if I played them, I really feel in my heart we could be undefeated or only have one loss. The main reason we have these losses is the veterans don't want to take the young guys under their wings. They want it to be about them. So when adversity hits, they run. I guarantee you we'll start winning because you're going to see guys out there who care and will carry out the game plan. They might make mistakes." So let me say a couple things. One, I'm going to defend Penny Hardaway because I've watched their last two losses. And I'll tell you this. When he says there's a group of people on this team that if I played them, I really feel in my heart we could be undefeated or only have one loss. I actually agree with that 100%. I've watched the games, and Penny Hardaway right now at Memphis has the classic situation of he's got a couple highly rated freshmen who are not helping him win right now, and he's got a bunch of older college players on the bench that when he puts them in, they make plays. And this is not a knock on Amani Bates. Amani Bates is 17 years old. I think he's going to be a good NBA player down the road. Amani Bates is not very good right now in college basketball. 1 of 10 from the field in the game against Ole Miss. They bring in a kid, Tyler Harris, fourth-year player, 5'9", instant spark plug. And so I do think that Penny Hardaway does have to find that balance of how do I get the guys that actually help me win into these games? How do I get that to happen? At the same time, how do I play my freshmen to keep them happy and, as he said, to keep his parents off the back? But what I would also say, and I don't want to pile on the point, I told you, Aaron Torres told you this was coming, okay? And this is not like a pat myself on the back, root against Penny Hardaway, all that good stuff. But what I will tell you is this. You can go back and listen to the shows. When Amani Bates and Jalen Duren committed to Memphis, I told you guys, I said, I'm not saying it can't work. What I am saying is this. It is really tough to bring players in the middle of August and expect them to acclimate perfectly with the players already on the roster. Because think about it, it's not about selfish who's right, who's wrong. It's about just think about this. You're a 19-year-old kid. You come to Memphis. It's year two. It's year three. It's whatever. You've waited your turn. You've bided your time. You're waiting for your opportunity. You are there. You lose. You win the NIT last year. Come back, April workouts, May workouts, June, July. You're lifting at 6 a.m. You're running on the track in 100-degree heat in Memphis. You think, I got this many minutes, I got this spot, I got this, I got that. You leave for 2 weeks in the summer because you have a couple weeks off between summer classes and the start of the fall semester. And you have two freshmen show up that immediately expect to get big minutes and big shots. And I'm not blaming the freshmen. I'm blaming the coach. Because one of two things has to happen. You either have to look at your roster and say, I brought you in, I believe you're good enough. Or you have to look all those guys in the eye and say, everybody's got to sacrifice. Because I told you this was going to happen. I knew this was going to happen because it's impossible to bring in two freshmen in August and expect it to be hunky-dory, kumbaya. Listen, criticize John Calipari for a lot. John Calipari, I believe, had a chance to go get Kofi Coburn in the transfer portal this offseason. But it would have been in the middle of July. His whole team had been on campus for 2 months at that point. They all liked each other. Everybody was getting along. And it probably, on paper, it would have made his team a better team. But it could have messed up chemistry. And John Calipari basically said, look, Kofi's a very talented player, but I cannot take him right now because it's going to mess up everything. Everybody knows their roles. Everybody knows this. Everybody does that. And that's why he refused to do it. And so I only bring it up because I think Petty's got a really interesting situation. And I don't think there's an easy fix. Now, in some ways, the good thing, they have Alabama and Tennessee in the next week or so, 10 days, 2 days, 2 weeks. Get one of those wins, everything looks right. And I will say again, if they just hit free throws, they would have won that game. I watched the game. It was terrible. They were awful, but they defend hard. And if they had just made free throws, they would have won. But at the same time, it is setting up as a fascinating situation at Memphis because I'll tell you this, I know it sounds crazy. I know it seems like if you listen to this show that I root against Penny Hardaway. I'm not rooting against Penny Hardaway, but it feels like it's coming to a head this year, where it feels like he has had every excuse in the book. Injuries, James Wiseman opts out of the season. You can go on and on and on down the list. I just bring it up to just say this. It feels like the fans are finally starting to turn on him, and it feels like he is finally starting to get frustrated as well. And so I've had a few of you DM me, text me, ask me, do I think Penny Hardaway gets fired this year? I do not think Penny Hardaway gets fired. One, I'd say a couple things. I think there's a reason that Penny Hardaway's name started surfacing with NBA jobs last year. I think he was trying to get out. And Memphis fans got mad, and Memphis fans said this, and Memphis fans said that. And I told you, I said, he's trying to get out. I know for a fact he's trying to get out. Didn't get the Orlando Magic job, ends up coming back to Memphis. Whatever, good for him, don't blame him. Go pursue your dreams. I'm not going to criticize Brian Kelly for leaving Notre Dame. I'm not going to criticize Penny Hardaway if he leaves for the Orlando Magic. But at the same time, I think there was a reason for that, and I think it'll be really interesting to see these next 3-4 months if Penny Hardaway does not turn a corner with this roster and if it does not work out. I don't believe that Memphis wants to fire Penny Hardaway in the same way that I don't think that Georgetown wants to fire Patrick Ewing this year. Now, I do think Patrick Ewing is going to get fired if they don't turn things around and look good. I don't think Penny Hardaway is going to get fired. But I could see a scenario where one of, like, three things happens. One, I think there's a good possibility that he turns things around and that they make the NCAA tournament and whatever. I don't think they're going to reach their potential. I don't think they're a Final Four team, but I think they make the NCAA tournament. Jalen Duren goes pro, whatever, whatever, whatever. What I could also see happening is that he eventually figures out a way to get out where it's clean for all sides, where he finds an NBA opportunity, he finds this, he does that, or potentially he resigns. I don't think the school is going to fire him. I don't think it's going to be a disaster. But I'll just tell you, man, you know, I'll just say this as I wrap up. I said this on Friday's show when it came to Penny Hardaway is, you know, I said this on Friday's show is that there's no more excuses. Like, this is year four. Everybody's healthy. It's on you as a coach. And I don't blame the players. And you brought them all in. You figured it out. So listen, I could go on and on, but we're going to have plenty of time to talk about Penny Hardaway. I have a sense that we will. All right. I think I'm going to get out of here. That is all for today's episode of the Air Tour Sports Podcast. What a show. So much to talk about, so much to discuss, so much to think about. Before we get out of here, I want to remind you, make sure that you are subscribed to the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast, iTunes, the Podcast Addict app, Podbean, Spotify, TuneIn Radio. Wherever you listen to podcasts, make sure that you are subscribed. Make sure to rate and review the show. Go ahead, give us a quick 5 stars. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, all that good stuff. By the way, a few of you have reached out privately, DM, social media, Instagram, whatever, say you love the show. So thank you for your support. Make sure you're following on social media at Aaron Torres Pod on Instagram, at Aaron_Torres on Twitter, Aaron Torres Podcast Questions at gmail.com, Aaron Torres Podcast Questions at gmail.com. That is all for today's show. Shout out to Tor Craig. Shout out to Rachel Hates My Voice. Long show, tiring show, college football playoff set. Penny Hardaway, what's going on? We'll be back on Wednesday.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.